Hello, and welcome to Selective Hearing, a space for honesty, healing, and transformation. I'm Julie DeMar, author, filmmaker, and host of this podcast. My journey began years ago in the entertainment industry, but I would soon learn that motherhood would become one of the greatest roles that I could ever play, pushing me to heal, grow, and embrace my true purpose. Through storytelling and creative expression, I've always shared my story. Now I want to share my experiences with nothing less than the hope of inspiring you. We've all practiced selective hearing, only listening to what we want to hear. But what if we changed that? What if we leaned in, embraced new perspectives, and truly heard one another? This podcast is about more than just a conversation. It's about breaking barriers, fostering understanding, and stepping into the best versions of ourselves. So take a deep breath, open your heart, and join me. What does selective hearing mean to you? Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to Selective Hearing. I am here this week with the beautiful Brannon Surratt, and we are going to have a conversation about growth, about how creative expression can help you heal, and about being overstimulated sometimes. So if you can relate, I'm sure you want to turn your speakers all the way up. This is definitely a conversation that you do not want to miss. So thank you for being here with me today.
Thank you. I'm so excited.
I am so excited for this conversation. And everyone, can you hear it? We have made it almost a whole year without you having to hear my voice sound like this. And I have officially come down with the cooties. So we're going to talk about that a little bit today, because not only do I have the cooties, but I'm slightly overstimulated. So great topic for this Monday morning.
Yeah.
Before I get started, I always love to give each guest the opportunity to just kind of share your journey and, you know, let us know how you got here.
I had babies way too early. We'll start there. There was a little bit of lack of self-awareness. I was 18 with a baby and no idea how to pay for daycare, no idea anything about myself. I remember saying I was touched out was how I would describe it. When I was pregnant, and then when I had the baby, I would just say I'm touched out all the time. I didn't really know what to do, so I found the first work from home opportunity that I could and wound up working from home with a baby. Fast forward 10 years, I guess it was, and now I have 4 babies. And all of them, I now know, neurodivergent. I had started noticing signs in the 2 oldest, and then just kind of trying to learn and adapt to what they need, but I was in survival mode. I was working from home still had all 4 of them at home, went right from no daycare to homeschooling. So they were with me on my body nonstop while running conference calls and trying to do writing and trying to coach and train editors and everything that my career had grown to be. And it was a lot. And I knew how to take care of them and I knew how to identify their needs, but it took me a really long time to figure out what I needed and to even acknowledge that touched out was maybe an understatement. And it was, you know, that thing that you do when you have littles and you're like, I'm fine, it'll be fine, it's fine. You know, you just kind of stuff everything that's going on for you, which is a mistake to anyone listening with littles. Like, you need to take care of yourself too. So we did that for up until 2017. It was just me as primary parent at home. My husband was working. And then I'll take anything to work from home career that started when I was 18 grew and evolved and changed over the years till I was working on books, nonfiction books with authors. Really fell in love with that, wanted to go full time and focus on it while my husband was burned out with his job. We made a switch. You come home and be primary parent, I'll work from home. And surely when there's another parent in the house and I don't have to worry about children all the time, I'll be able to get so much more work done. And the opposite kind of happened. He came home and was like taking them to the library and going to like movie days and at the park all of the time. And suddenly my house that had been full of 4 rambunctious children who needed lots of attention, or they would like slip and slide in cornstarch when I wasn't looking, So constant awareness, constant listening, like all of that was just dead silent now, and my brain just stopped working. I had no idea why, because I thought it was supposed to help. And I just happened to be really grateful to be working with an author on a book about ADHD at the same time. And I remember when we first started, like the cameras came up on Zoom and he was like, "Oh girl, you're ADHD." Like immediately. And I was like, I don't know, like my kids are, but I don't know if I am." And throughout the process of working with him, it became so clear. And part of that clarity was the kids had been my coping mechanism to keep my brain functioning. They were kind of like their own little Adderall dose, like that stimulant all the time, sometimes overstimulant. And when they left, and were gone and outside and not my primary focus, I lost all of that stimulation and I just couldn't focus anymore. That sparked, between that and putting them in virtual school, rather than just homeschool, and needing them to have quote unquote labels and getting resources that they needed and getting the support they needed, they got their diagnoses. My two oldest went first. One of them was ADHD, one of them was autistic. And I'm like, I don't know, I relate a lot to both of them. And then that was at the same time I was working on the book. And then I went and started my own diagnosis journey and started getting tools more than just survival mechanisms. And it's still a journey. It will always be a journey. But it's the difference between not having language and just having things like I'm touched out or I'll be fine. And then getting language has not only helped me, but it's helped me help others, especially the clients that I work with who tend to gravitate toward me as neurodivergent, probably without the language. Things like, I don't know, I'm really all over the place, or I just have a lot of ideas, or I need things to be a certain way, you know, and I'm able to help them in a different way now too.
It's so like refreshing hearing you say all of that, because I'm sure, and it's crazy because I just had a conversation recently about a lot of adults who were never diagnosed as children and always felt different, always kind of bounced through the world like what's going on, and they were kind of like blame, shame, label, punished as, you know, these kids with behavioral issues who were, you know, caught the stigma of being bad, you know? And then, you know, they become adults and they're like, gosh, just I got this thing about me, touched out. Mine is not on duty. Once I go down, I'm not on duty.
I tell mine momming hours are over. If you want a like happy mom tone, it's gone. If you talk to me now, it's at your own risk.
Like, I'm like, yep, not on duty. And I have to go into a corner and literally retreat and recharge to effectively care for everyone. And I love how, like, now we're talking about it because our grandmothers didn't talk about it. Our mothers didn't talk about it. They were like numbed out, you know, martini hour, Valium, whatever they were giving them back in the day. You know, they were spanking their kids. They were doing all the things to survive. And we, you know, unfortunately were the product of that. But like, I just love how now we talk about it. We say, hey, you know, I'm not okay. And if I'm not okay, this whole ship is gonna, we're drowning, okay? So give me a minute. And like, it teaches our kids to identify those things too. Like my kids will say, like, I need a snuggle or don't touch me. My kids are very much like, I need time by myself. I don't want to share with you. And they, you know, have to go out in their corners. One is wants to do this, one wants to do that. And it's fine. And it's because I set the tone with me. And so they're like, well, mommy needs a minute. I need a minute too. Yeah, let's all take a minute, you know?
Let's do that. We love a minute.
Yeah, or 10.
Or
Listen.
cross fingers that somebody's hyperfocus gets triggered and we don't see him for 3 hours.
Oh, listen, that's my oldest. Like he will go into like imagination land and be playing with dinosaurs and socks and belts and turning that into a whole war zone on a volcano with lava. And he's distracted, you know? And then my youngest is a farmer. Go do that. You go fight battle dragons. You go farm. Farm the dragons. Let me sit here. Okay. But at one point in time, it wasn't okay to say any of that. And that's where I think a lot of the stigma, like, I'm a bad mom. I'm not doing enough. I have to run until I'm burnt out to prove myself. All the things come in. So, oh my gosh, I have to get into it. I have to get into your journey into discovering like being neurodivergent yourself, because I you said in your pre-show, like, hey, I took my children to get evaluated, and that's when some stuff started coming up in myself. So what was that like?
It was good, I think. Question mark. That whole process is so challenging itself. Like the questions that they ask are odd and not really worded well usually. Like there's a lot of catching up that I think has to happen in the diagnostic process. I think that it probably went better for me because I had already been trying to do research and learn more about how their brains worked, just because I saw the signs, right? I remember my second born, the guy that did the diagnostic was like, so if it's ADHD, well, it'll be like one session. If we think there are signs of autism, it'll be multiple. It'll take a longer time to do that diagnostic process. And they both came back after one session and he's like, ADHD autistic. And I was like, yep, we don't need multiple. It's very clear with this one. Got it. I've known that, you know, it's clear now I can tell the school. But the signs aren't the same for everybody. And so I had done a lot of research to like, you know, how do we deal with the meltdowns that are lasting for 45 minutes when he's 2 years old and has no more language, even though he's really verbal and all of these things. I'd done a lot of research into how to help him. And because of that, I was starting to get into things like autism in girls and other ways that ADHD can present. Like I had kind of found that corner of the internet and books and kind of stumbled into, I might not present the same way that they present, but when I understand what the questions are in the diagnostic, when I understand what they're actually looking for, maybe I actually do relate a lot. There's more going on here. It was really good that I'd gone through that for me because then I went in with my third kid, and she's a girl, 12, I think, when we went in for the diagnostics. And had I not done the research and like understood how it could present differently, I think I would have gone through her diagnostic process differently because there were things like, does it make a lot of eye contact? And I was like, does that mean no eye contact or does that mean doesn't use eye contact properly? Because I'm like, she stared into our souls since she was two, you know? Like, there's a, and if you're not staring, like, she'll move your head. Like, we have to make eye contact to signify listening. And it feels a little excessive. And he was like, yes, that is inappropriate eye contact and you need to check the box. But had I not done that research and started to like dig into it and understand the different ways of presenting, I think I would have gone through that process differently with her. There was a lot of like, you know, the web of learning that we do where you're bouncing around like, ooh, this, and then maybe this, and oh no, what is that? And then you start to self-identify and realize how you fit into these descriptions that I think are still really being formed. People are still learning how to describe things. Even the hyperactivity side of ADHD, I've had an equal amount of people telling me you're really introverted and you're really still and there's no way you're possibly ADHD. And then people who really know me going like, oh my God, will your brain just stop for a hot second? Because it's internal. I've never been the bounce around like at high physical energy kid, but I can't watch a movie without knitting because there's not enough going on, you know? So those different forms of presentation, I think, were a little bit challenging to settle into and to find. But because I've got a nice little sample size of four children in my house with all kinds of different presentations, and I had to learn all kinds of things to help them, it led me down the right paths that I needed to be able to help myself.
But I think I mentioned in the pre-show about my journey with gifted adult. I had a listener reach out to me and ask me if I was ADHD because he noticed when I do shows how I'm kind of like, and I was like, I don't do that. I went back and watched a couple of videos like, oh, I do, you know? And I was like, I never noticed that. I never noticed like, I got gizmo eyes. That's like the best way to describe it. Like, and I'm like, but I'm paying attention. I know what's going on. And he was like, you might want to look into that. And then I was like going through the whole autism, ADHD. And then, you know, when you're going through therapy and life coaching and all the things, and now I can add a psychology student to the list.
Yay, awesome.
You start kind of going back to this like ghost of Christmas past, if you will, of your life. And you're like, gosh, when this was happening, when I was a kid,
Oh, that might explain it, or this, and that. And fortunately, when you're in school, everyone, you can go, get checked out if you need any additional services. So that is the path that I'm exploring now. And as I was, going through some, self-research, looking into ADHD, looking into autism and all that, I came across something very beautiful, gifted adult. And I've never felt more seen in my life and never had so much like, wow, just information about things that explain me. And then I was talking to a really good friend who's also a therapist, and she was telling me like, hey, Julie, you're never going back to the way that you were. Like, she was like, your brain now knows too much. It's starting to fire in different ways. You're starting to learn different things. She's like, you're never going to be who you were once before. And she was like, so make sure that in this process that you're also talking about that, and make sure that you're also not only sharing that with your friends and your community and your partner, but share that in your safe spaces, how that's making you feel, how, that growth process is affecting you. She was like, your brain's never going to allow you to do it. And I was like, gosh, even the difference in that. So I even wanted to take that. I said all of that, everybody, to get here.
But not ADHD, that could never be.
No, it's so important to just share these things for yourself, for your process, for your healing. So important to do that. So we're going to talk about that balance.
Because I think it's good to share. I think it's good to learn how to share when you don't have a conclusion yet, when you don't fully know, but to still say whatever words you do have, or write whatever words you do have, or somehow communicate, like, even if it feels incomplete and you don't yet have the full, I have a diagnosis and it's this and it means that and I need these things. If you don't have that full picture yet, sometimes it's really hard to speak up because you're trying to puzzle it out in your head first. And in reality, like, we're really wired to bounce off of each other and to get input from each other. And it's so much better if you can say, even if you have words like touched out, or need a break, or I'm exhausted, or I don't know what's going on, or is this normal? There's a little bit of a danger with is this normal because we tend to travel in packs and you're gonna get other undiagnosed, overstimulated moms who are like, that's totally normal. It's just the gig. This is how we do it, you know? And then one by one, you'll all find out what's going on. But it's still important to speak up, I think, even before you have things fully articulated, because that's when you can start to get help and support. And feeling seen is good, and it's challenging and hard and a little bit risky to our brains. Growth is good, and it's challenging and hard and a little bit risky to our brains. So it's kind of on us to stretch into those spaces when we have opportunities. Because your friend's right, like, your brain's never just gonna be like, you know what you should do is grow and change entirely and become a new person. It won't volunteer that for you.
Okay, so I want to get into balancing creativity. So this is kind of like three parts, because of course. So we're going to talk about balancing creativity and creativity playing a part in your well-being. I love creative expression. It's tough, well, obviously. So let's talk about it.
I mean, I think that it's really, really tied to that same thing of sharing what you have and stretching into those growth spaces. One time I was talking to a mentor of mine in the book space. There was this like group conversation going on about how come teenagers can break out with like really remarkable music. They can be really good musicians, but they're not often very good writers. And what we landed on, like, my immediate thought was because language is hard. And we collectively landed on the idea that, like, music happens at a nonverbal, different part of your brain space, and you can articulate and express emotions that you don't yet know how to name and you don't have language for. And then when you're trying to write a book, for it to resonate at that level, you have to have a lot of awareness and growth and brain development and all kinds of stuff to be able to get that language precise. Any kind of creative expression feeds into the other. If you want to write a book and you feel compelled for no reason to knit or to paint or to, play around on Canva a lot or whatever it is, Following those impulses, I think, even though it might feel really, really adjacent, really disconnected, not adjacent, it is adjacent because you're moving through those pathways in your brain at a level that doesn't have to be verbal yet. And then over time, you can grow into those other spaces. And when the words are ready to come, they will come. And of course, I'm biased here toward books because that's my whole entire life. It's my special interest. It's what I help people with. It's been like 20 years now. But I think all forms of creative expressions, when you're feeling that pull to do them, you don't have to have a reason, an articulated reason to do them. Just follow that impulse because you're making things happen in your body and your brain that just sitting and thinking will never do. It metabolizes that for you. And that comes out and serves the things that you can articulate that you want to do, like growing in business or growing your writing a book or, you know, moving up in the next level of your life in whatever way. Those unarticulated ways of creative expression will serve those articulated goals that you have.
I agree with that so much. And my mind does so much. I have to, like, people are like, oh, you should use this resource or that resource to create this and create that for your show. Or even someone, I forgot even what the software was called, was like, you know, you can just throw your audio in there and it'll cut it all for you. And I'm like, but why would I do that? Why I have to edit it myself? Like, it's like, you know, you could throw your video in this and it'll edit it for you and it'll cut down some of the time. But there's that part of me that finds such great resolve in that. And even to the point where when I'm editing audio, I see the sounds before I hear them. Like, after I listen to the first part of the conversation, I can pick up on like your breathing patterns, how you talk, where you pause, where you're going to insert a ah or a, and I can start cutting just by sight. It's crazy. It's like
That's
so
cool.
hard to explain, but I do it. And I'm like, if I'm having a day, I'm going to go edit an episode. And then when I come out of the episode, I'm like, your girl feels good. I have to do that for me. But thank you to everyone that's always offering me resources to save time.
Which is, that happens in books all the time. I think there's a, especially right now, AI, there's so many tools with AI that people want to make things easier or faster or more efficient or more productive. But it's not always about the productivity. It's not always about, like, you know, maximizing your whatever. That's such a hustle and grind mentality. And when you're doing something because it's coming from you, which I think the way you're talking about editing audio is how I edit text. I'm like, I see, it almost feels like the Matrix. Like I can see it in this like code and know where things need to shuffle around. And no software is ever going to replicate that for me, even though I talk about it in software type language sometimes. Like it's not going to happen. It's something that comes from me. And that is not something I'm trying to optimize for hyper productivity and ultimate profit. I just read Braiding Sweetgrass, finally. It took me forever to read that book and like get to it, but I had babies, so whatever. It's like 10 years old, but I have a life back now, so it's cool. Anyway, I just read the book, and one of the things that she said was she was talking about slow harvesting with like plants, but the line was there's the digging isn't the digging itself is an important constraint. My whole I don't even have words right now speaking of because it just feels so true for all of our creative efforts, all of our growth efforts, all of our relational efforts. Anytime you take transactions out of the mix, the slowness of digging for what it is you actually want to create is an important constraint because when you let yourself slow down and do a little bit harder work and feel into it and connect to it and treat it like something relational instead of transactional, you find so much more in it. Like it, there's magic there. There's something, it's alchemy, it's whatever it is, happens in the slowness and the challenge and the actually doing it. And if you were to outsource that to tools and things like that, while you're still getting something out of it, you're going to lose what it was you would have gotten out of it. There may come a point when you're like, okay, new interest. I'm done editing podcasts. I want to do something else. And then you can use the tools. But as long as it's feeding you in some way, I think the slowness is part of the gift.
I agree so much with that. I need it. It's my
Yeah.
thing. It's
Yeah.
definitely my thing. I talk about, and I didn't know how to edit audio at first. I kind of became like Kanye. It's like, that's my process. I'm like, if you listen to the early episodes and then you get to now, you're like, okay, your girl got good, but it was me sitting here. So, okay, we touched on being overstimulated at the very beginning of the show, but you know, this is the meat and potatoes, so we got to get in there now. How do you navigate now where you are in with what you know? How are you navigating being overstimulated?
I love that this is coming up for this podcast, for what your podcast is, which is obviously intentional and you're doing a brilliant job. But my answer to that is I've learned how to listen to the cues of my body in a very different way than I used to. Even to the point of I was knitting with some of my daughter's yarn. She got like these tubs of yarn for Christmas, and they were all varying forms of acrylic yarn. And they would feel fine, feel really soft, and I'd be like, I can do this. And so I would like take some of her yarn and do a project, or she needed help winding them up or something. So I had my hands in her yarn for a while. And then I noticed like I was feeling sick. My joints were hurting. I was exhausted. I was irritable. I hated everything. My skin hurt. And I traced it back to that the texture of that yarn was completely overstimulating me. And I was had ignored it to the point that my whole body hurt from it. Stopped messing with the yarn, started feeling fine. So those tiny cues. I wouldn't have traced them back to even the possibility of overstimulation had I not learned how to listen to, oh, sometimes textures feel bad and I don't know how to describe it other than that. And that those are signs that I know I ignored, especially when they were little. And I didn't feel like I had a lot of choices then because they were nursing and they were co-sleeping. It was like 24/7 on my body, and I didn't know what to do. I didn't feel like I had choices, and so I just kind of dealt with it, and that meant ignoring all of my signs. So, we went from hitting the point of complete meltdown and being like, I'm touched out beyond anything, and you've got to take all of them, and I have to disappear, and I don't know what to do, to catching those really early signals and being able to manage and make adaptive choices much earlier in the cycle rather than waiting and waiting and waiting and ignoring all of the sounds and the signs until it was too much.
Oh my gosh, I have flashbacks when you're talking about nursing and co-sleeping. And okay, I'm so close to it. I have a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old. You know,
Oh,
that was like 10 minutes ago.
yeah, that's not far enough away. It does get better mostly.
Oh my gosh. And
Yeah.
it was like, and I had,
Yeah.
and I was like nursing while pregnant. And then he
Yeah.
came out, and
Oh.
then he was nursing, and then
Yep.
they slept in there. They slept in there last night. It's probably why I'm
Yep.
triggered. Like,
Probably
I
it's
woke up
too
with them on my
soon.
head. Oh
But
my gosh.
case in point, my 10-year-old, she stayed with me the longest, and she came in the other night at like 1 in the morning. And was like telling me about some point in her audiobook. She woke up to go to the bathroom, and there was a sad point in her audiobook. And then she wanted to talk to me about all of the things in her audiobook. And I'm okay. I'm a night owl, so I was okay. I was like, okay, dude, whatever. Go to bed. Go to bed. But then she came in again at 7:30 and was like, the dog woke me up, and now I'm awake. And she was like a morning person, and she was all bouncy. And I was like, look, I dealt with it last night. I cannot do this morning. Leave my room. And she did, which is glorious and does not happen when they're 4 and 6. And it doesn't happen when you don't know how to set boundaries as mom to say, mom hours are over. This is not happening right now. It gets better when you learn how to articulate those things and they learn how to reciprocate and pay attention to them, which does take time.
We just got the 3-year-old. Well, he just turned 4 in January. We just got the 4-year-old in his bed, and I can see his room from my room. So we'll go to sleep and I'll see him tiptoeing down the hallway. And I'm like, go to bed. He'll run back in his room. And then I can see him tiptoeing back down the hallway. Go to bed. He'll run back to his room. And he does it like 10 times. Like he'll tip, 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 get in your bed. And then he'll go back in his room. And then I'll fall asleep so hard and I'll wake up with him on top of my head at 6 in the morning. Boom. He made it, everybody. He made it. He made
Victory.
it. Yeah. Okay. I want to talk about the power of selective hearing, and I'm going to quote you. Okay. So you interpret selective hearing as absorbing what resonates and leaving the rest. How does this philosophy play a role in your work with writers, especially those who struggle with self-doubt or external expectations?
Yes.
Because we know everyone that's creating has expectations. How do you navigate that?
So I've done most of my work has been interview based. I don't do a lot of transactional work where you just hand me something and then I give you a product back. I do a lot of calls that are either coaching or when I was ghostwriting, I was doing interview based, really heavy, intense talking with them. What I've found is kind of like sometimes we have to share things before we have the full articulation of them. I've learned to listen for when are we just parroting what someone else's expectations are, or when are we using language that someone else has given us, and when are we saying like what's really ringing true and what's really coming from us. And a lot of that happens in when we're trying to make explanations for things, right? So if we don't know, if we'll go back to overstimulated, if I don't know that the acrylic yarn could be overstimulating me, I could have been like, I'm getting the flu. My whole body hurts and I'm so tired and I don't know what to do. Those symptoms are attached to getting the flu. I must be getting the flu. I see that happen in creative work where we're the author is not moving as fast as they want to be, or they're really struggling with a particular part of their text, or something like that is happening, and they go, those symptoms are attached to writer's block. I need to be more disciplined. Those symptoms are attached to, you know, me, I'm resisting and I'm procrastinating and I need to just get over it and make it happen. And I listen for the signal and kind of let the noise go. And the signal is, I'm stuck on this thing. So why are we stuck on this thing? Have you talked about it before? Is this a new topic for you? Is this a new exploration? Have I nudged you to go a little bit deeper than you've gone before and you've got to spend some time digging and letting it form before it emerges? Is this something, I've seen this happen with whole books where people will want to go through iteration after iteration after iteration, even though the book is done, it's good, but they're dragging it out. And that could get attributed to resistance or procrastination or perfectionism or the book actually isn't good or all kinds of things. But sometimes what's really going on is when I release the book, it's going to level me up and change me in a way that I can't undo. And I'm not ready for that yet. So, how do we slow that process down and make us ready for it? So, we're looking at what's literally going on and then addressing that instead of just taking their self-diagnosis of, I'm not, you know, I need to hustle more, help me find a routine or a rhythm. That may not be what they actually need. This happened similarly the other day with one of my kids. They were really overtired, hadn't eaten well, had exerted themselves a lot, were really busy all weekend, and then had a little bit of a thing came up that made them anxious. And so they're sitting there telling me all of the things that are making them anxious and afraid and worried, and I'm never going to sleep, and I don't know what to do, and I feel like I'm sick, and all of this stuff. And I was like, right, I hear you. Your brain is being very helpful trying to give you language for what you think is wrong. But what if we listen to your body first? And like, is there any signal in your body that tells you you're wired and not going to sleep? And they're like slow blinking at me. And they're like, no, I think I'm probably going to sleep. I'm like, okay, let's listen to that, right? Do we have physiological reasons for why you might be feeling nauseous, or is it only anxiety? And they're like, no, I really didn't eat really well. And like this. So we found all of these symptoms that we could address and then deal with the anxious thoughts when we're more regulated and when we have more, you know, of a foundation underneath us. And that's the kind of work that I do with my authors all the time, even if it's not in so many words. I'm not like, have you eaten today, author? Have you had protein? But I am looking at what are we actually dealing with here, not what you've ascribed it to, because those things that we ascribe it to are usually coming from outside expectations and not our own drive and our own knowing.
Yeah. Did I tell you about my book? I have to send you my book. I wrote a book. It's almost celebrating its 1 year birthday. It's called Sink Full of
Yay.
Dishes. And it's
Amazing.
about my negative narrator.
Yes. Oh my goodness.
So what I did
Yes.
was I took my negative narrator, gave her a name, named her Monica, and I wrote a stage play. And so it's a stage play of just all these. I used to write down the things that I was saying to myself in a journal. So it's a stage play that is constructed of all these journal entries. And Monica is just running around all day with this dialogue in her head. And what happens if you like wake up and you have a negative conversation with yourself and you don't get in there and find out what the need is? You just
Yeah.
roll with it in that snowball effect. So it's Monica's bad day, basically. And in between each act, there's an interlude, like a traditional play, but the interlude is actually a workbook where I ask the reader to
Nice.
identify what is happening and have they ever experienced these things themselves? And before reading this, did they know what this was? And what do you think you can do in the future to kind of calm that storm? So that's the whole thing.
That's
And
amazing.
it's called Sink Full of Dishes. I'm going to send it to you. But
Yay.
that is again my little spinny. Oh no, I can't just write a book about the girl in my head. Let's make it this big production. And yeah, but it's really.
But you listening to that and following what it needed to be, I think is what allowed you to be able to write it, because there's a lot of authors who will go in writing the book they think they're supposed to write. And had you tried to like posture as, I don't know, like we're gonna write this Brené Brown style, and I am above it, and I am just telling you how to understand it and do it, that would have come out very differently, and you probably would have had a different level of access to it, and it might have been more challenging to write because it wasn't the thing that you were that was coming from you that you actually wanted to write. And that can be a huge blocker for people too when they are writing the book they think they're supposed to write, and it's forcing them to try and go get new information or a new understanding rather than just sharing the understanding that they already have and the way that it wants to emerge. Great work.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm going to send it to you and then you let me know how you
Yay.
feel. I guess that brings us to the overcoming the shoulds in writing. It leads right into that because my mind wouldn't let me go any other direction. It was like,
Yep.
no, like put it out, like bleh, put it out there. My editor brought it in like, okay, girl, some of this does look like your diary. We keep this, that's good, but this, we don't need it. And I'm like, but that's what an editor is for. But yeah, let's get into like aspiring authors and how they get stuck in the shoulds of writings or what a book is supposed to look like instead of stepping into their own authentic selves and their writing process.
I think this one's really hard to do because it's hard to parse out what you're perceiving as a sh what is a should and what is really coming from you. I can't know that from the outside look. So we have to look at indicators like, is it flowing? How do you feel when you're writing? I'll have authors send me their text, like a chapter or, a chunk that I had assigned them or a full manuscript, and they're like, "What did you think?" And I'm like, first, how do you feel? How are you feeling about this? Because if you send it to me and I'm like, this is gorgeous, but you're like, ugh, I don't know if I can submit it. And what if it's, you have all of these questions. It doesn't matter if it's objectively fine. You're not here to write something that's objectively fine. Like, you're here to communicate something to a person that, and usually something that means something to you. So how do you feel about that communication? If you were going to read this out loud to someone, how would that feel? Would it feel authentic, or would it feel, stilted and weird? If you were to have the conversation that this book starts for the next 3 to 5 years, or 5 to 10 years, or the rest of your life, how would that feel? Is this the conversation you want to be starting? And those kinds of how am I feeling assessments, I think, tell us more than any list of do this, do that, do this, do that can ever help you, And if I were to try and tell you what you should do to avoid shoulds, it would spiral out and become no longer helpful. It's like quantum. It's weird. So I think checking in with yourself first and foremost. Obviously, I'm an advocate for an editor, right? You need an outside perspective. You're too close to it to be able to fully assess everything yourself. But how you're feeling about it has to play as much of a factor as how it's showing up on the page. So when I talk to new people, I usually tell them our objective is to match the book in your head to the book that's actually on the page. And the work of editing is figuring out how to make those two come into alignment with each other. And we can't do that if you're withholding and not showing up as yourself to the book and not being open to the book being yours and the book coming from you and representing you and going out in front of you as a representation of yourself to the readers you want to reach. Like, you have to be willing to show up in that way. And I think in that way, working with an editor is so much more than just getting that outside perspective on the text. If your editor is also a coach, it can be a way for you to practice showing up that way, for you to practice showing up fully with just that editor before it's on the page and out in the world, and now you have to show up fully for strangers.
Okay, so there is a thing that I got to get into before we go. And I have to lead with this because I'm always on social media telling people, not, oh, I'll do it one day. I'll do it one day. We wait for all the right circumstances to do the things that we have been telling ourselves that we want to do. And if we wait for the right amount of money or the right amount of followers or the right amount of this and that, we'll never end up doing it. So I always say, not one day, today. So to everyone listening, if you want to write a book, if you need help with getting started with writing a book, it's not one day, it's not the right circumstances or all that. You do it now. Like, you do it now. I was reading my diary one day and was like, oh girl, you got something. I like to go back and read to see, like, am I still Hot Mess Express or am I trucking along? Because you don't necessarily see it. So my thing is, let me go read it. Oh, last year, oh yeah, crazy town. Today, no, not so much. So that's why I'm like, just do it. And I want to get your take before we, hand out all of how everyone can reach out to you on how this can be another part of your growth journey.
I think the thing to remember with all of that, I've started calling it stretching without pulling a muscle. If you throw yourself into all of the things that you're possibly considering maybe doing, if you throw yourself into all of it at one time, or if you start to throw yourself into it with someone else's expectations, like, because I said I'm working on a book, that means I have to have it published in 2 years, or whatever those expectations are, you're gonna pull a muscle. Like, it's gonna hurt, right? And it's gonna set you back, and you're gonna have to like recover. It's gonna be challenging. So, making those steps, making the today be like choices like honoring all of the creative expressions that come up and giving yourself space to unwind and deal with that overstimulation so your brain can function and the thing you're wanting to write can emerge, or journaling and using a diary and letting it come up in that way, like honoring all of those things that are self-care and that are creative expressions as part of that work. I think s does two things. It separates the shoulds from what's actually emerging from you. It separates you from what other people might qualify as writing or pursuing whatever goal it is that you're doing. And it also is a way to use that intention of I'm going to honor everything that my body and brain needs so that I can move toward this book or toward this goal. That's a way to use that intention of the book to motivate yourself to honor everything that your brain and body needs. So they feed each other, where when you do one, it serves the book, but because you're intending to do one to serve the book, it also gives you some drive and some energy around taking care of yourself, which we don't always have. Sometimes we won't just decide, I'm going to do it because it's good for me. Like, I'm not, there's certain foods I'm not going to eat just because they're good for me. I need you to throw some cheese on it. Like, I gotta have a driver. And that's the same thing here, too. If you just are doing it for the outcome or the product of a book, and you are grinding in that direction, but not honoring yourself along the way and not hearing yourself along the way, you might get a product at the end, but you're not going to grow into the author of the book that you really wanted to write. And that, someone asked me the other day what my favorite part of this work is, and I think it's that. I think it's seeing an author grow into themselves and seeing the author emerge through the process from that early, like, ooh, maybe I think I have something good, to like, I have to share this with the world. I'm gonna send it to you. Like, you know, that transformation is wild, and it only happens if you're honoring it as a process of transformation. And yeah, it's hard, man. It is not the same as churn it out in 6 months, but it's good and it's worth it, and it really does launch you into the next stage of growth.
And everyone listening, I believe that that is such a beautiful and powerful message to close on. But before we go, I'm going to ask you to please share how everyone can contact you.
Yeah, so you can find me at my website. I'm the only Brandon Surratt on the internet, I am pretty sure. That's my website. I have a podcast called B is for Book Coach, and it's on Substack, and it's just weekly encouragement, so I can be in your ear even if we can't be interacting directly, and helping you work through your process, how on whatever pace that is for you.
So everyone, here I go. Listen up. I do this every week, so there's absolutely no excuse. You get this three ways. You're going to get it on the resource page at selectivehearingshow.com. It's going to be in the show details. And Brandon just shared it with you right now. So guess what you're going to do? You're going to go over there, you're going to click on these links, and you're going to talk to her and ask her any questions, because it's not one day, but actually 2 day. So thank you for being here with me.
Gorgeous. Thank you so much. This is lovely.
I know I had such a great time talking. So, everyone, I will be back next time with a brand new episode. So, and hopefully, I don't sound like this. So, until next episode, this is Selective Hearing.